You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. What better way to kick off the next few scary episodes than diving into another subject I'd yet to cover, and that's phantom black dogs. Author W.T. Watson joins me to discuss this fascinating topic from his book of the same name. Whilst many stories of these creatures originate from Norfolk and Yorkshire here in the UK, we discover that the stories of black dogs can be found across the world. We look into the history of these encounters, the language of insults, dogs as portents of doom, and much, much more. A big thank you to W.T. Watson for joining me on this week's show. But before we get there, don't forget you can support the show for signing up to Patreon for $4 a month for ad-free episodes, early releases, and other content. Mysteries and Monsters is available across all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you can subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find all our merchandise now by going to mysteriesandmonsters.com and using the links at the top of the page. Artwork, as always, is by Dean Bestall. The show is produced by Brennan Stahl from the Ghost Story Guys. And Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange network. Now, let's venture on the hunt for these mysterious phantom black dogs. On today's Mysteries and Monsters, we look at one of my favourite paranormal subjects I've yet to cover on the show, phantom black dogs. From the Padfoot to the Barghest, the Black Shuck to the Guy Trash, author W.T. Watson has been uncovering the legends, lore and history of this fascinating subject from around the world. Mr. Watson, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk to your listeners.
You are very welcome. As we were chatting before we dove into the interview proper, I am delighted that somebody has finally decided to tackle this subject in a more contemporary fashion. It's a subject, as I mentioned in my introduction, that I've had a long fascination from, obviously coming from Yorkshire, one of the hotbeds of these wonderfully terrifying creatures that occasionally assail travellers at late at night. As we were discussing, how on earth has an author from North America been bitten by the phantom black dog bug?
Well, I actually write both fiction and nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And back in 2016, I was thinking about writing a novel, and I was doing some research. I wanted to write something different, right? Everybody's writing about werewolves, everybody's writing about vampires, there's a few people writing about the fae, blah, 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 in urban fantasy. Mm. I wanted to have something different as my main character, so I started doing some research in different ghost lore and that sort of thing, and happened to blunder across the black dog as a folkloric object. I read some of the stories and I thought, wow, okay, so that's kind of neat. And I came across a story, and I cannot remember for the life of me right now who the author was, about a shape-shifting black dog who actually was able to take the form of a human being and then back into a black dog. So I thought, wow, now there's an idea. What if, and next thing I knew, I was writing a novel with a character that is a shape-shifted black dog who hunts werewolves. For those who might be interested in those kinds of things, the novel was called Hunting the Beast, and it's also available from Beyond the Prey Publishing. So as I was doing the research, though, I'm thinking to myself, gosh, there's a whole lot of stuff about these phantom black dogs. And somebody should write a book about this. I realized as I delved into this further that some people had written books about it. But when Beyond the Fray approached me and said, you know, have you considered writing a nonfiction book about phantom black dogs? You know, this would be a great way to, you know, kind of promote the novel as well. And I thought, well, sure. Well, let me take a look at this and see, you know, I wanted to know if there was any modern stories, because all the stuff I had read had been, you know, 1800s or The Beast of Bungay, and, you know, back in the 1800s and so forth. So I started to do some research, and lo and behold, I discovered that there were black dogs in Canada, and there were black dogs in what I call Latin America, which is anything south of the U.S. border. There's a wonderful black dog in Maryland called the Snarly Yow.
Yes.
Which I love the name. I found the name so interesting. So yeah. I started, you know, digging deeper into the subject and reading more books. And Phantom Black Dogs, Walkers of the Liminal Way was the result. That's how I got started. I think, though, that I might have been fated to write this book. I was born on October 1st, which happens to be National Black Dog Day in the United States. it's a day that rescue organizations throughout the United States have set aside for trying to get black dogs and black cats adopted, because those creatures have a lot more trouble getting adopted than other dogs and cats do. So I really love the coincidence of that. And when I found out about it, I had to include it in my little shtick when I talk to people. I had neighbors in Georgia that were, I had a lab border collie mix for quite a number of years, and I had neighbors in Alpharetta, Georgia that were deathly afraid of this dog. And I didn't know why. I bring the dog out in the hallway to take her down to go out and do her business, and they would literally run back into, I tell this story in the book too, in the introduction, they would literally run back into their apartment, slam the door and lock it. And I didn't understand why until I started to do some research on their culture and realized that in their culture, there are beings called jinn, which your listeners have undoubtedly heard of. Mm-hmm. And one of the favorite forms for a jinn is a black dog, so which is something I talk about a little bit in the book. But I'm trying not to get all my supernatural creatures, you know, mixed up into one thing. But once I understood that they were literally afraid that my dog was a spiritual being that was going to possess them, you know, we kind of came to agreement where, you know, if I was bringing Echo out, then they would go inside, or I would bring Echo back inside so that they weren't uncomfortable. but it was quite the fear for them, and, you know, understandably so. If you grew up in a culture where these beings could represented a real threat to you.
Yeah, and I think it is very interesting, as someone that's grown up owning black Labradors and currently owns three black cats. For me, I often forget that there is this kind of perception in regards to black dogs and black cats that some people do view them rather negatively. And there's a very interesting part of your book where you refer to the fact that we often describe dogs as man's best friend. And yet, if we look at the language that we use, often in regards to insults or terms of disdain towards people, they are often based on dogs, aren't they?
Yeah, they are indeed. You know, I mean, and I don't want to go into the list of insults that I went into the book here. But, you know, I mean, you just think about something as simple as, you know, referring to somebody disdainfully as a pup as a way of expressing the fact that they're an inexperienced and callow youth, basically, or, you know, calling someone a cur. You know, we have this kind of mixed message about dogs. You know, on the one hand, the dog is man's best friend, you know, and we see these wonderful stories about, I worked in search and rescue for a while, was volunteer in search and rescue. In fact, Echo, the black dog, was actually an air scent search dog. But, we hear all these wonderful stories about animals rescuing people, police dogs rescuing the officers that they work with from certain doom and all that sort of thing. And, people's pets going into burning buildings to pull them out. And, the Newfoundland that loves to jump into the water and save drowning people and all that sort of thing, So we have this folklore of the dog as being a friend.
Mm.
But at the same time, and I talk about this in one of the chapters in the book when I talk a little bit about history, we also have a deep association of the dog with death.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to ancient Egypt, where you start to talk about Anubis. The Norse had their Garm, which was the kind of guardian of the hell realm, the realm of the dead.
Yeah.
The Greeks had Cerberus. So we had these dark colored dogs that were responsible for were responsible for guarding the dead. They were the guardians of the dead. And because of that association with death, I theorize at least that, people have always had a little bit of mixed feelings about dogs. Obviously when dogs first came into human lives, they were probably scavenging around human dwellings and so forth, and they may have actually, or they probably did actually scavenge human bodies. We've always had some ambivalence about dogs, and particularly black dogs. That ambivalence has made its way into the black dog folklore, starting all the way back with, the Beasts of Bungay and then coming forward.
Yeah. When you started delving into this subject, were you surprised at just how much literature there is out there, Travis, has been written in regards to these legends and folklore? Because as we were discussing off air, it's obviously something I've been brought up with living in Yorkshire. It's one of the UK's hotspots for these creatures, along with Norfolk and Suffolk and other such places. And obviously one of the things I've always liked about these creatures is they've all got such wonderful names, as I touched on in the introduction. I mean, was it difficult for you when you started looking at this, to think how many names can you have for one kind of phenomenon, especially just in England?
Yes. one of the things that got me hooked, really, was when I was, beginning to do my research, and I realized how many names there are for these creatures. Bought up some of the common ones for the UK.
Mm.
Have, like I said, in Maryland, you have things like the Snarly Yow,
yeah.
Which I thought was great. You have black dogs in Canada too. They're usually just referred to as black dogs. In Central and South America, we had, in Central America, you have the Cadejo, which can be either black, and if it's black, it's the bad guy, and if it's white, it's actually a guardian.
Yeah.
Which is something that a lot of people don't realize about the black dog phenomenon, that there is more than one aspect to this being. It's not just a portent of death or, this murderous, terrible spirit, kind of like a banshee that shows up to tell people they're going to die. It also has other aspects to it, like, there's a lot of history of the black dog showing up as a guardian spirit, or apparition or spirit so much, because it's not real precise as to what we're talking about. But yeah, as an apparition, there's a long history of the black dog also being protective. And the funny thing about that is that that protective nature seems to be sort of by territory. Ethel Rudkin, who is one of the seminal writers on the phantom black dog phenomena,
yeah,
published in Folklore back in the 1930s, the Folklore Journal back in the 1930s, became convinced from her researches in Lincolnshire, if I'm pronouncing right,
yeah,
that the black dog was a protective spirit, because almost all of the stories that she heard were about dogs that showed up to protect young ladies walking, you know, from point A to point B and so forth. So there's a lot more to these guys than just the, ooh, scary black dog with red eyes, gonna eat you or whatever. and they don't actually eat people. Showing up to, you know, everybody associates the black dog, anybody that knows about it associates it with death and dying, and it's important. So there's more to these guys than just that.
Yeah, I suppose that's another aspect to this that makes it such an interesting phenomenon, is that it's not a one-size-fits-all. You know, as you refer to there, there are so many variations of what these creatures are supposed to represent. There are traditions that would say that it's a portent of bad luck or death or impending doom, whereas there are others, as you mentioned there, there are guardians and are used to hold this role as a protector of damsels on their on late nights in dark country lanes, Travis. But also here, even here in Yorkshire, we've got two kind of strands with it, whereas one is a mischievous, cheeky kind of character that will occasionally entice people to get on it for a ride, and then it'll throw them in a pond or over a hedge into a cow pat. whereas the other ones are more the traditional creatures that strike fear into anybody that comes across it, and that's just in Yorkshire. So when you're looking at breaking something like this down, it's very difficult to kind of unpick it, I would imagine. To kind of, it would have been a lot easier just to focus on one aspect of it. But once again, this is a multifaceted phenomenon, isn't it?
Exactly. And one of the things that I point out, or one of the things that I try to do as I was working my way through the folklore and looking at that, the being that you're talking about that invites people to go for rides is probably the Pooka, which is a fairy being that can disguise itself as a black dog, amongst other things, or a black horse. And then, you know, it's the mischievous thing that dumps people over hedges or dumps them into the lake or sometimes drowns them, depending on what folklore you're listening to. I kind of set those stories to the side because, I wanted to focus specifically on this particular apparition, because there's all kinds of stuff about black dogs, you know, without having to go into, you know, the hounds that ride with the wild hunt.
Yes.
You know, the Pooka, which can disguise itself as a black dog. The Scottish Cushie, which is a fairy dog, which tends to be white and have green ears, but, you know, not the same thing. You know, it's a different phenomena. So even in the folklore, you have all of these dogs or shapeshifters that appear as dogs that show up that you have to kind of sort your phantom black dog out of. So what I was looking for when I looked for black dog stories was, or what came forward for me, this apparition is actually usually, and I can think of one exception, is usually seen as a very large dog. Okay, so that's the first thing that we see. The traditional descriptions often describe it as being the size of a calf or standing as tall as a table. More modern descriptions have compared it to everything from Newfoundlands to Mastiffs. But if you know any of those breeds, they're massive. They're absolutely huge. The other thing that we see very frequently with the black dog, but not always, because in its guardian role, it tends to look more normal. But when it's scaring people, you'll get the self-illuminating eyes. They can be red. They can be silver. I've seen a couple of yellow colors. But the eyes glow. And they're often described as being the size of saucers.
Yes.
They're not normal dog eyes. you don't get that normal dog eye thing going on. It's not just eye shine, folks. It's lighting itself up. The other thing that distinguishes the black dog and the thing that really sets the dog apart as being an apparition is that the dog appears and disappears at will. And what I mean by that is that, you'll be walking along your local country road and suddenly a dog will appear at your side. Now, this dog may look so real that you think that you could just reach over and pat him on the head. And in fact, some people tried to do that. I have a couple of stories in the book where people tried to pet the dog and their hand went through the dog. And this is when they realized that this was not a natural being, right? So the dog will appear and then they will walk a certain distance and it will disappear. Sometimes it will walk into a tree. Sometimes it will walk into a wall. Sometimes it will disappear into a church or a cemetery. There's all kinds of places where the dog disappears, but the interesting thing and the thing that I think sets the Phantom Black Dog apart is that very often what you see is an apparition that seems to have a territory.
Yeah.
It has a specific area that it, for want of a better word, patrols. And so those are the kinds of things that I was looking for when I was looking for my stories. You know, because as I said, there are a lot of dog entities out there that can be confused with the Phantom Black Dog. But this was the basic apparition that I was looking for. And before I get off that subject, the one exception to that rule that I found is a North American black dog. There is a black dog in Connecticut that's called the Black Dog of the Hanging Hill. And he has very specific has a very specific legend around him. This dog is black. It doesn't have glowing eyes. It's about the size of a spaniel. So it's a good bit smaller than the normal version of the black dog. But the legend of the Black Dog of the Hanging Hills is that the first time you see this black dog, it's for joy. The second time you see it, it's for sorrow. The third time you see it will be the death of you. So, of course, the story that I include in the book, these two geologists are up on a hill in the Hanging Hills, and they see the black dog. And for the one gentleman, Pinchon, I think his name was, it was his second time seeing the black dog. But for the other gentleman, it was his third time seeing the black dog, and he promptly slips and falls down a crevasse and dies.
Oh.
So this gentleman who's seen the dog for the second time experiences the sorrow of seeing his friend who saw the dog for the third time die. So kind of an interesting story there. So my recommendation to readers is if you go to the Hanging Hills in Connecticut and you decide to look for this dog, be sure you only see it once.
Yes.
Don't go back. because you will be, you know, because the second time you see this thing will be for your sorrow. So, you know, let's stick to the good stuff. We'll just stick to the good stuff.
Yeah. There are some interesting stories that you've uncovered from places I would not imagine that these legends would have survived. And I was really interested, that one especially, because it is very different to every other version of this creature that we have, as you say, primarily on its size. But it is very interesting. And I think there's another one from North America where is there a gentleman who decides he's going to try and strike this mysterious creature that pops up in the road in front of him. And as he's trying to swipe at it, doesn't it keep growing?
Yeah. One of the interesting things about the black dog is this idea that it can change shape. Now, as I said in the beginning of the interview, there is one story, and I think it was Ethel Rudkin, who I mentioned earlier, who put this one out. It was either her or Theo Brown. I don't recall right off the top of my head, but these two are very seminal writers in the folklore of the Phantom Black Dog. But there's a story of, the Phantom Black Dog that this Italian fellow, quote unquote, shows up in a town, makes friends with a young boy, and then tells the boy that, he's going to have to leave and he wants this kid to come with him. And the kid's like, no, I've got things to do here. He says, well, fine. Will you take care of my dog? And this large black dog appears. Well, long story short, the black dog turns out to be this fellow and almost drowns this kid when they go swimming. So, which is the story that I based my, my novel off of, except my shape-shifting black dog is actually a good guy instead of a bad guy.
Yes.
But one of the things that we most commonly see as far as the shape-shifting goes for our black dogs is this idea of them increasing in size.
Yeah.
And I think the story that you're talking about was one of the Snarly Yowl stories. In which this fellow has gone off to the local store some distance away, and he's on his way back, and this snarly yowl appears in the path before him and won't let him pass. You know, talking about frontiersmen here. You know, these guys are you know, not easily frightened, and you know, they've seen some stuff out in the woods, and they've probably been chased by bears or so. You know, he's not going to let some dog tell him he can't go past. So he sets to, as the story goes, he sets to with his dog, and he's swinging away, and he's not hitting anything. But this dog is getting larger and larger and larger every time he tries to hit it until it occupies the whole road. And, you know, you would think, well, okay, so the guy's been swinging at it. He can't hit it. Why doesn't he just walk through it? This is one of those strange, you know, paranormal witness things that we see periodically where people do uncharacteristic things. For some reason, he just doesn't seem to be able to go by this thing until it finally shrinks back down to size and then disappears. And then he goes on his way, and he's fine. I think I don't think there was even a death associated with that one. He just has this instance where this dog appears.
Yeah.
Which you sometimes think, you know, there's a story in the book about a fellow who's bicycling. This is in the UK. He actually is riding home. I think this was in Norfolk, actually. He's actually riding home to his home village, and I forget what that was, after going to a dart tournament. And he sees this enormous freaking dog sitting on the corner. And he, you know, he makes his way by this dog very carefully because he doesn't want to get ambushed. And he rides off a little ways, and he hears the dog start to follow him. He can hear it padding along behind him. And he's, you know, pretty sure he's going to be attacked from behind, and he's looking behind him, and the dog is gaining on him. Dog just basically runs by him and then cuts an L and stops in front of him. And he jumps off of his bike and he puts between him and the dog because he's sure he's going to be attacked.
Yeah.
Well, about this time, just down the road, there's a section of, I think they call it spinney in Great Britain,
yeah.
Section of trees and brush and so forth. Yeah. This car comes barreling out of there. Driving erratically, driving at high speed, takes off down the road. And this fellow realizes that if this dog hadn't stopped him, he would have been where that car came out, and he would have probably gotten hit by that car and might have been killed, which doesn't alleviate his anxiety at having this large black dog standing there staring at him. But eventually, as so often happens in these stories, once the danger is past, the dog disappears.
Yeah.
And he goes on about his way. But, you know, so you wonder in these stories where the dog stops in the road and, you know, gets bigger and obstructs the road and so forth, if it's not doing the guardian thing and preventing people from getting into accidents and that kind of thing. Interesting idea.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of facets to that particular encounter that I read in your book, as you refer to there, because there are two things to that, because, as you say, it's very interesting that there are numerous encounters where this black dog essentially blocks a road or a path, Travis, to stop them, the person it's encountered from moving on for a variety of reasons. In regards to that, there are keeping this person safe, it would seem, and avoiding certain death. And there are others where people seem to be stopped from going forward at specific times as a protection,
yes.
It would seem. And yet the other aspect of this is that this is one of the few stories where the dog seems to be, because one of the other interesting aspects of this is that whenever people encounter them, whether they're on foot, on horse, in a horse and cart, on a bicycle, the black dog can keep pace quite easily. And I know that, I think there's one story where somebody's on a motorcycle and they pick up pretty good speed, and they just say that this black dog seems to be gliding alongside them, just keeping pace without breaking sweat, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. I talk about that in the what is a black dog section of this book, talking about the speed. Nobody's ever outrun a black dog.
Yeah.
Ever. You know, now the interesting thing is that despite this fact, I can think of one story right off the top of my head where a black dog is chasing someone through a marsh.
Mm.
British author Christopher Marlowe.
Yes.
and you know, he testifies that he can feel the dog's breath on his back, and you know he knows he's about to get eaten, and he flies back to this cottage where he's staying and pounds on the door. And, oh my God, let me in! This thing's gonna eat me, right? And the dog never does anything to him.
Yeah.
You know, even though, you know, dogs in general can outrun people. And, you know, these dogs seem to be capable of keeping up with moving cars and motorbikes and so forth. This dog never actually catches up to him, which, you know, he gets admitted back into the house and he's huffing and puffing. And, you know, I call that story the, you know, be careful what you ask for story, because he actually went out into the marshes of this area to look for the black dog, and he found it. And he wasn't so happy about finding it.
Yes. Yes.
But the other interesting thing about that is, you know, he found the black dog, But I was thinking as I was reading these stories, and a couple of other where people have run away from the dogs, and you know the dog can catch this guy, right?
Yeah.
That it reminded me a lot of some of Linda Godfrey's stories about the man wolf, where these creatures, whatever they are, with wolf head and you know, bipedal stance, will chase somebody, but they never seem to catch them.
No.
You know, even though you would think that they should be able to. So maybe it's a cryptid canid thing. I don't know. But I found that story really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there is a lot of examples of being bluff charged as well with these kind of creatures. And it's a very interesting aspect of it, as you refer to there, because they clearly have the capacity to go as quickly as they wish, if we are to believe the witnesses in numerous encounters.
Yep.
And therefore, One ponders what is going on there, because it is quite peculiar that this, whatever it is, that when it manifests in whichever realm it's come from and wherever realm it disappears back to, Travis, why does it seem to enjoy putting the willies up people? It seems to enjoy the fact that it wants them to know it can go as fast as they could even imagine, and yet it just seems to play with them.
Yes, it can keep up with you, as you said, if you're on a horse. You know, if you're on foot, if you're, you know, in a carriage, if you are on a motorbike, I don't remember the exact speed for that one, but, you know, it was a number of kilometers per hour, that this fellow got going, and the dog just kept pace with him. And you do wonder, you know, why does the dog behave in this particular manner? And, you know, is it a matter of territoriality? Is it just trying to get you out of its territory? You're, like I said earlier, in the stories where the dog just manifests and then walks along beside somebody, it invariably will disappear somewhere along the pathway.
Hmm.
Occasionally it walks somebody home, but then it disappears. You know, so it's almost like these dogs have, or this apparition has, this specific territory it's interested in. And, you know, these people either, you know, for some us only known to the black dogs, these people either evoke a territorial response where it's trying to get them out of its territory, or a guardian response where it's going to take care of them through its territory. And, you know, of course, we can't look into the mind of a phantom black dog. We don't really understand why that is and why some people get the bejesus scared out of them and other people seem to be okay. I, like I said, there's there are a number of stories where the dog appears next to a person and it looks real, and they think to themselves, oh, nice doggy, and they go to pet this thing and realize that it's an apparition.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes those sightings are death portent, but the dog has made an effort not to be scary.
Mm.
So it looks completely normal. And then you have the other kind, which don't look normal at all. So, you do wonder why on earth this apparition has chosen to behave in the way that it does. And it's one of the mysteries and one of the things that really fascinated me about doing the research for this.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, in the Central and South American regions, in the Central American region, Birchall tells us that they've gone so far as to divide their dogs. And you have a black dog that is kind of the nasty spirit, and you have a white dog that is, actually serves as a guardian spirit and will protect people's families and so forth. So the folklore is bifurcated there. It's just endlessly interesting as you begin to make your way through this world.
Mm. I think it is as well, because there are many different facets to these creatures. There is, I believe there is one from the Central American region, which is often mm-hmm. cited looking after people that are inebriated and unconscious. And people go, oh, look at that dog, he's looking out for them. But there's far more to it than meets the eye, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. So the black dog in Central America holds a really interesting position. And we wouldn't know a darn thing about this if it weren't for a fellow named Simon Birchall, who actually settled in Central America, had a Guatemalan wife, and was fluent enough in Spanish to go through the local papers and read things and go, oh, wow, that's just like the black dog in Britain.
Mm.
But in the Central American areas, they call a dog cadejo. Like I said, there is a white version of this dog that is known to protect people's families when they're away from home and that sort of thing. The black version of this dog actually appears and has a special attraction for alcoholics.
Yes.
And in fact, will stand guard over poor passed out on the street and refuse to allow anybody to rob them and so forth. And the story for the cadejo is that it's actually the devil.
Mm.
And the devil is just waiting for these people to die so that it can claim their souls, which seems kind of inefficient to me. It's like, if you were going to claim somebody's soul, why not just take them right then, right?
Yeah.
Why wait? But that's the thing. And the reason that I think, and Birchall thinks that the reason that the black dog has such a bad reputation in Central America is that there was very early on, there was an association between, you had the Spaniards who came over to Central America, and they had, of course, their, heard of the black dog in Europe. And they associated very quickly the black dog with, I believe it's a Mayan deity called Tezcatlipoca. Who's kind of a god of chaos and the other world and all kinds of things. And he was the god that the Christian missionaries associated with the devil.
Mm.
And one of the things that he did, and Birchall writes about this in his Black Dogs in Pre-Hispanic Mexico, one of the things that he did or was known for was appearing as what was called and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation on it, as Coyotl, I think, kind of like coyote with an L.
Yeah.
So he would appear as this dog-like being, this dark dog-like being, and he would obstruct roads, just like the black dog does, right? And so in the Spaniard's mind, this devil became associated with the black dog almost immediately. And, I theorize that this is the reason that the black dog in Central America has such a bad reputation.
Yes.
And why it's still, it's used as a form of social control by the church in Central America. It was used anyway. I don't know if they still do this or not, but it was used as a form of social control in Central America. See what happens when you get drunk? The cadejo is going to get your soul. So you know, the black dog becomes, you know, a scapegoat for religion in Central America in some ways.
I mean, did you find any more weird and wonderful connotations for these black dog stories? Because that's obviously a very interesting interpretation, that using the black dog as some kind of moral tale, that if you drink to excess, you can expect your soul to be taken. And it's quite interesting that the dog has become this kind of vessel for this this guilt to be brought forwards onto these sinners and their alcoholic consumption.
Yeah, we, you know, I mean, the original black dog story back in the day was actually 1577. There, I got my dates and everything. The original black dog story, as far as we can tell, was something called The Beast of Bungay. Mm. And that story, you know, has a definite, if you read the entire tract, which was called A Strange and Terrible Wonder, if you read the entire tract by Abraham Fleming, it's basically a sermon.
Yes.
You know, supposedly there was this terrible storm on the 4th of August in 1577, and, you know, the parishioners of Bungay met in this church, and, you know, the storm was so terrible that everybody thought the world was going to end, right?
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, this huge dog appears out of nowhere, you know, black in color, and, you know, it kills some people and wounds some other people, and, you know, does, you know, of course, Fleming, the writer of this thing, immediately assumes that this dog is the devil, right?
Yeah.
You know, it runs to and fro in the church, and, you know, it's wringing people's necks. And there's one particular graphic passage where he talks about the dog giving someone such a gripe on the back that therewithal he was presently drawn together and shrunk up, as it were a piece of leather scorched in a hot fire. Now you hear this and you think, how, what, wait. And the postscript to this is that supposedly this individual survived this happening to him.
Yes.
Now, what kind of life he had, I don't know. But, and the other thing you want to know is, okay, so gripe in the old English usage back in that day meant to take a hold of something.
Mm.
How did a dog grab somebody? I want to know. Inquiring minds want to know how the dog grabbed somebody. Inquiring minds also want to know how a dog went through a church and grabbed two kneeling congregants and wrung their necks, wrung the necks of them both at one instant, clean backwards, such that they strangely died. Now, honestly, if your neck gets wrung, I don't think it's strange that you died. But... you know, so how's the black dog doing this? Is it some kind of psychokinetic manifestation? Did the dog grow hands? How does this work? You know, Fleming doesn't explain this to us at all, right? And a similar thing happened apparently in the town of Blytheburg on the same day.
Yes.
And, you know, and Fleming goes on and on and on about how horrible this is. And then the tract ends with a prayer of repentance. So you have to wonder if Abraham Fleming was, you know, telling the truth at all, you know, and didn't just make this all up as a moral tale. But it is probably one of the most widely circulated stories about the black dog, and one of the reasons why the black dog, the phantom black dog, has become such an object of horror, right?
Yeah.
Because the first story about it, about this creature, is that it runs around in church killing people. I don't know that I buy that. There's also some confusion in other texts about this incident at the church where it just says flat out that the devil did all this stuff,
yeah,
and doesn't include a black dog at all.
Hmm.
So we don't know for sure that there was a phantom black dog involved in this story at all. And I'm inclined not to buy it, simply because there are a few stories of the dog being the cause of someone's death. But in almost all cases, they're not the proximate cause. If they did cause the person's death, it was more of an accident. You know, the phantom black dog jumps onto the back of your wagon where you're carrying fish and scares your horse so bad that it bolts and your cart turns over and, you know, and you're injured there, or, you know, something along that line, where, you know, it's not the dog actually killing somebody. It's just simply the fright that the horse took or something along that line. There's one other, I think it's in Norfolk. I don't remember off the top of my head. It's one other story of dogs actually, the black dog actually running people down and taking their throats out on the moors, right? And again, we have a situation where smugglers who were using that coastline as a drop point were spreading stories of the phantom black dog in these areas to keep people off the pathways along the coastline at night.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to think, well, hey, if I spread this story around and then I put some big, gnarly, nasty dogs out there to run people down, it's going to keep people away. So there might be a completely natural solution to that idea. The more likely thing, talking about the various aspects of the black dog, one of the things that it's recognized for, of course, is that it portends death either of the witness or in the family. In a sort of informal survey, Ivan Bunn, who's a folklorist in the UK, looked at a number of black dog stories, and he came to the conclusion that this wasn't true, that people didn't die as a result of contact with a black dog. And then he turns around and tells you the number of people who actually died or had a death in the family. And it turns out that something like 20% of his witnesses actually had a death in the family or died themselves. So there's something to this idea that the dog is a portent of death, because people will see the dog and then, they'll get a call from the hospital that, so-and-so is in the hospital and about to die or so forth, or somebody had a heart attack or stroke or something like that. So in that way, the black dog is associated with death and is a portent of death. There certainly seems to be an association between the black dog and storms. In the well-known well-known to me, the famous 1972 sighting.
Yes.
One of the UK Coast Guard, a guy named Graham Grant, had a sighting, which was fairly ordinary. He saw a large black hound type dog on the beach and the thing disappeared before his eyes. He's like, okay. And he'd never heard of the shuck at that point in time, the black dog. So it was an interesting story just from the standpoint of this guy is a search and rescue person. He's a trained observer. He sees this dog that looks kind of like a Labrador running around out on the beach, and then it disappears. He notes that the beach had just been bulldozed flat, so there was no place for the dog to hide. He sees his dog, sees it disappear, doesn't think much of it. But, other than it being a really weird thing, and he finds out about the whole black shuck thing when he mentions the sighting to his peers. But the interesting thing about this story to me is not too long after that, a gale blows up. So we have some stories where the black dog is associated with storms. There's an interesting story in the Norman book about, I believe it was in the Norman book, about, the young lady who's again in Norfolk, which is black shuck territory.
Yeah.
And she and her small son are looking for a place to buy a pint of milk, and they're not having a whole lot of luck. They finally find a store that's open, and the boy has fallen asleep in his car seat. So she leaves him for a couple of minutes to go in and buy her milk and whatever else it is that she needs. It is the stereotypical dark and stormy day. There's thunder, there's lightning. It's the weather is bad. She comes back out and her son is just freaking out. The boy has got eyes the size of black dog saucers, right?
And, yes.
He's frightened, very, very frightened. And when she asks him what the problem is, he tells her that the car. So she thinks, well, okay, six-year-old, he's probably just imagining things. You know, the kid tells her that he saw this huge black dog, but only she's something go off in the bushes, right? She saw what looked like a large black dog going off in the bushes as she came out of the store. And the boy describes this thing that was trying to get into the car as, you know, being a large black thing. And apparently, you know, he associated it with a werewolf because, you know, this is modern times and people don't know that. They really don't know the stories of phantom black dogs. And, you know, so when they see one of these things, they frequently will associate it in modern times, the werewolf, because that's, you know, the only thing that they can think of that's, you know, dog-like and scary.
Yeah.
So, you know, he describes this large black dog and she doesn't think anything of it until she looks at the trunk of the car and notices that there are canine paw prints on the car. Very large canine paw prints. So, you know, she's inclined to think that something came to the car and scared this boy. And I was interested in, you know, this whole thought of why would this child think that this dog was trying to get into the car? So I found that one pretty interesting too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you see your dogs associated with storms sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I can go on and on about different weird things that black dogs are associated with. My favorite, though, yeah, when if you've ever read Colm Kelleher's The Hunt for Spirit.
Yes.
Is it the Sherman family? I think it's the Sherman family.
Yes.
I don't know if that's the nom de plume that they use for them or what. But so they're, you know, offloading some stuff as they're moving in, and you know, they've got a calf in a fenced-in enclosure, and they see this enormous wolf. Now, we're not talking about a black dog here, although they did see a black dog later. But there's this enormous wolf comes and, long story short, grabs this calf. They open fire on this animal with large caliber weapons, and it does nothing. Absolutely nothing. Well, as it turns out, our black dog is bulletproof, too. and one of my favorite stories is a one line, almost a throwaway, from Ethel Rudkin, where one of the locals from Lincolnshire tells her that Sam Priddle once shot at a black dog against a big willow tree, and his gun barrel busted, and he came home white as a sheet. which is an excellent story all by itself, because, you know, I mean, somebody tries to fire on one of these animals and not only does nothing happen, but his gun barrel blows up. So that's interesting in and of itself. But if we go back to Central America, there's a Mexican story where a young man who's, you know, walking home, again, walking down a country road, encounters a black dog. And of course, because the black dog has such a fearsome reputation there, this dog gets too close to him, and he pulls out his 38 pistol and tries to shoot this dog. He pulls the trigger, and the bullet comes out of the end of the gun and falls to the ground. Now, not to be deterred, he tries to shoot the dog again. And the same thing happens, at which point he begins praying to the Virgin Mary, and apparently the dog goes away. So our black dogs are bulletproof. There's a number of firearm stories in the book, most of which come from the United States and, you know, where there's easier access to guns than in some other areas of the world. All of which agree that, you know, you have these hardy frontiersmen, for instance, in Maryland, again, the Snarly Yow, you know, who open fire on the dog, and, you know, they're a crack shot and all this stuff is related. But they never seem to be able to hit this dog. Or they're sure they hit the dog, but nothing happens. You know? And as we've said, you know, you can try to pet the dog, but your hand's going to go through him. So, you know, your black dog is bulletproof, which is one of my favorite things. And, you know, we have associations of the black dog with, you know, churchyards, cemeteries, and association of the black dog with, you know, all kinds of other interesting places. So, you know, I talk, there's a whole section of the book, you know, where could you find a black dog?
Yes, if you want to do such a thing.
Yeah, I talk about how common black dog sightings are along roads and lanes and, you know, areas where people are doing transit. There's some association of them with water and, you know, churchyards and cemeteries and cairns and all that sort of thing. So if you want to find a black dog, read my book.
I think one of the wonderful stories that you've got in your book is the one about Lord and Lady Lothian and the black dog that comes out of a fish, Travis. That's one of the strangest aspects of this whole set of stories that you've uncovered there, because that's just such a weird version of this whole legend, because there's a couple of things at play here. But anyway, it's a very odd story, isn't it?
It is a super odd story. And, you know, one of the things that I'll point out is that most of the stories in the book, not all of them, the Beast of Bungay is an exception, because that's a legendary tale. Hmm. And this one, the Lord and Lady Lothian story, are both more legendary than otherwise. I tried really hard in doing the research for this book, and one of the ways that I narrowed things down was trying to find actual witness accounts. Mm-hmm. Now, the witness account might be from the 1870s, but, you know, still somebody told the story to the folklorist.
Yeah.
You know, because otherwise, I mean, there's so many legends about these dogs. I could have written a 500-page book if I had included all of the legends. And I was, as I said, as I told you earlier when we were talking before the podcast, I was trying to write an introductory book with enough interesting stories that people could dig into, and then also some resources that people could go to if they were really interested, because there's obviously, like I said, there's Ethel Rudkin's work in the folklore journals. There's Theo Brown's work in the folklore journals. Ivan Bunn. There are a number of scholars and researchers and folklorists who've taken an interest in the subject.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to, you know, find witness accounts, but the Lord and Lady Lothian story is just hysterical, because, you know, this fellow goes out and he pulls a fish out of the pond, and a freaking black dog comes out of it. It's like, now, first of all, how big was this fish?
Yes.
You know, or was it like a genie coming out of a bottle? You know, it just kind of oozed out as a black mist and then turned into a black dog. You know, that was super interesting. And then the thing gets into the manor house and is raising all kinds of cain until they find a cunning man or a wise man or somebody from London.
Yes.
Who came in and put in partitions to settle this dog. And, you know, the whole story, the legend revolves around, you know, a maidservant or some individual who worked at the manor house who was upset because they were doing renovations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as those who are familiar with ghost lore know, renovations can oftentimes result in hauntings being stirred up.
Yeah.
Well, she was scared to death that this thing was going to, that these renovations, if they took out some of these partitions that this wise man had put up, that they were going to have this black dog running loose in the house again. So the black dog comes out of a fish and then goes and haunts a manor house by basically running laps until they put walls up that keep it from doing that. And, you know, and you're looking at this story thinking to yourself, what the heck? Where did that one come from? One of those weird one-off stories that just, you know, it's one of those things that makes you go, huh?
Yeah.
But it was I loved that one, and it was just it was too good to not put in the book.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like the one that I tell from Linda Godfrey toward the very end of the section on the black dogs, in the miscellaneous section, where she talks about this fellow who sees this enormous black dog in California, you know, and you wonder after you read this story whether this fellow was maybe eating the wrong kind of mushrooms or something, because he sees this enormous black dog. He has the feeling this dog is telepathically scanning him. And then, you know, the dog goes on its way. He goes back in the house, but he's let his Shar-Pei out to do its business. And he comes back out and finds this dog has shrunk down to size where it can actually mate with his dog. And the interesting thing about this is that they end up with puppies. And Godfrey includes a picture of the puppies in the book.
Yes.
They look perfectly normal. Yeah. But one wonders if their eyes don't turn red at night when nobody's looking. there's these wonderful one-off stories that you find too that make you go, what the heck was going on with that?
Yeah.
they're amusing. And at the same time, they're an integral part of the folklore too, and you don't understand where this story came from, because it's just so odd that you have to just kind of document it and go on.
I think the last thing I want to touch on, if that's all right with you, is that there is a fantastic story that I was never aware of. And like I say, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. I'm just someone who's had a deep interest in this subject. And reading your book, I have certainly learnt a lot more than I knew. So congratulations on pulling together some incredible witnesses and stories and legends from around the world. It's an outstanding collection. And this is one from France, which is a gentleman called Pierre Van Passen, who was a journalist.
Yeah.
And this one was one of those where you've got a gentleman who has a weird encounter in a house, and he goes, oh, well, maybe I was seeing things, whatever, I don't think too much of it. He goes away, comes back and discovers that other people have seen this strange thing, mm-hmm. and thinks, I think I might see if I can see this again. And everything seems to be going okay for a while, and then it all goes tragically wrong, doesn't it?
It goes tragically sideways. And the postscript to the story is really interesting, too. And I'll talk about that. But Van Passen was a well-known journalist. He was renting this house in France. He had an encounter with a black dog coming up his stairs in this house. And the dog, you know, very typically, very territorially, right, goes and disappears at the top of the stairs. Again, as you said, he doesn't think a whole lot of it, you know, this is an oddity, but maybe I imagined it. Maybe it was the moonlight and the night or whatever. He goes off for a few days of work. He comes back and his household is abuzz because a couple of people have seen this thing now. And he says thinks to himself, well, okay, maybe I'll try to see this thing again. And, you know, I'm a dog lover, so this next part of the story really upsets me, particularly since I had German Shepherds when I was a kid.
Yeah.
He brings with him, when he goes to look for this phantom black dog, two police dogs, which we assume are probably German Shepherds or maybe Belgian Malinois. We don't know for sure what they were. And he and his son and I think one other person are trying to see this dog, and sure enough, this creature appears, starts its way up the stairs, and these two dogs respond, and the dog basically disappears. But when the two police dogs get to the bottom of the stairs, there is an enormous fracas, as though these two dogs are fighting something they can't see.
Mm.
And the long and short of it is that one of the dogs is killed in this incident. One of the dogs is injured. This kind of tears it for Van Passen. He calls the village priest to come to the house. And oddly enough, the priest blames it on one of the maid servants.
Yes.
You know, which from a paranormal point of view makes absolutely no sense to me.
No.
You know, we're left with the impression that this priest, something that Van Passen didn't know. Because when this girl is terminated from her employment, the black dog sightings stop.
Mm.
Now, we know that teenage girls are oftentimes the focus of poltergeist phenomena.
Yeah.
But I found nothing in black dog folklore to indicate that teenage girls manifested black dogs, other than the fact that black dogs sometimes appeared, you know, as teenage girls were walking home to, you know, ensure their safety.
Mm.
So I have to wonder, you know, what was going on in that household. I talk in the theory section about this idea of thought forms and wonder if, you know, if our little miss wasn't dabbling in something she shouldn't have. But if she was, she must have been enormously powerful to produce a thought form that could actually kill a dog.
Yeah.
So that one goes in the, you know, definitely unexplained mystery section, but it was, you know, it's a fascinating story, and it was one that I found in a couple of different sources. So it wasn't just somebody made this up. You know, I actually managed to track it back to its original source. You know, there are, and there's mention of it, I believe, in Van Passen's actual autobiography. So very interesting story, very sad.
Mm.
Nobody likes to lose a dog, but you know, one of those stories where you're like, okay, where did they get that idea?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there really isn't a relationship between black dogs and teenage girls other than the one I mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah. It is an unusual footnote to that story. I must admit, when I read through it, I was a bit, as you refer to there, it's almost as if the endings from a poltergeist infestation, which everything leading up to it has zero connection.
Yeah.
And I've never come across that. I know occasionally there will be people that claim that sometimes poltergeist phenomenon can be the manifestation of teenage girls' anxiety or teenagers suffering some kind of trauma or not being able to deal with the situations that may be going on in a house or a home or something like that. But yeah, it was very odd that the priest just goes, oh yeah, well, it's her.
Yeah, and points the finger at her immediately.
Yes.
I mean, there's no, you know, ifs, ands, buts, or maybes about it. You know, oh yes, I'm the priest and this girl is to blame. It's like, okay, why? I mean, you know, is her name Sabrina? She's a witch? I just don't know. You know, I was minded of the television series here, you know, or on Netflix. You know, I was like, oh my goodness, you know, what sort of a young lady summons black dogs into people's houses?
Yeah. And I think the other aspect of that is it's a story from, I think, after the First World War. So it's a fairly modern one. You know, we're not talking about something that happened 150, 200 years ago either, are we?
No. You know, it's not the Beast of Bungay. It happened in relatively modern times between the two world wars. So, you know, I mean, you know, everybody wants to look back at the 1800s or whatever and say, oh, well, those people were just superstitious.
Yes.
I always have a problem with that because it's like, okay, how many farmers have you known?
Yes.
You know? I mean, most of those folks are really salt of the earth people, and they might have their little superstitions, but they don't believe in boogie people.
Yeah.
You know, or boogeymen or whatever. You know, they... You know, I mean, yeah, in UK, you know, the and Ireland and those kinds of places, you certainly had country folk who, for instance, left out offerings for the fairies.
Mm.
You know, I mean, we can prove that. We've got the whole Evans-Wentz Celtic faith and fairy faith in Celtic countries to prove that.
Yes.
But, you know, in general, they didn't run around going, oh, this, oh, that, oh, look, spooks everywhere. They tend to be very grounded, very salt of the earth kind of people who are not given to seeing apparitions at the drop of a hat, despite what, you know, modern day sneering materialists would like us to believe. So I'll leave it at that. Don't get me going on.
No, it's an opinion I share. So you're all right. You're in good company.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you get me on the scientific materialist rant, and I'll never get off.
Yeah. I mean, often these stories have a kernel of truth somewhere. Whatever the reason is.
Oh yeah.
there's more to this than just fanciful tales. And as you say, you know, most farmers I've met are very down to earth and aren't prone to flights of fancy.
You know, the thing that I come back to is, you know, if one person sees a thing, whether it's a phantom black dog or a Sasquatch or a man wolf or a ghost or, you know, whatever, if one person sees that thing, you can say, oh, well, maybe it was a mist, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. But when you have the kind of evidence that you have for an apparition like the phantom black dog, where you literally have hundreds of people that have seen this thing, I mean, if not thousands, then, you know, unless you're a complete idiot, you have to think that there's some reason why people keep seeing this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I put forward a number of theories at the end of the book about, you know, possibilities ranging from, yeah, there's a, you know, there's a certain number of large black dogs running around in different places, and people may have mistakenly identified them as such, as phantom black dogs, to some really arcane theories, which, you know, derive from, you know, some of the stuff I've read in magical practice and stuff. So, you know, I mean, I never think that there's just one explanation for something. You know, I've always been a, or tried to be and or type of thinker, or a both and kind of thinker. That's what I'm trying to say. A both and kind of thinker where, you know, I'm willing to say, yeah, you know, there could be cases of mistaken identity, but there could also be this, there could also be that, there could also be this, you know, so on and so forth. You know, if you've ever read Whitley Strieber and Jeff Kripal's book, Supernature, they at one point come out with a whole paragraph worth of stuff that could be related to the abduction phenomena. And it's a long paragraph, you know. It's not just one thing, you know, and this is the thing that you know, we see happening so often with, you know, people in the paranormal or the Freudian or the cryptozoological, is that, you know, everybody wants, you know, wants to have one pet theory. This is the explanation for X. And I'm afraid that the paranormal looks at them and goes, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you think you know what's going on, you don't.
Yeah, there is always that preconceived idea that it's a one-size-fits-all for most paranormal phenomena, and as soon as you put it under the microscope, it soon falls apart.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I have to congratulate you, as I've said a couple of times. It is a wonderful book. I think if anybody's unaware of this phenomenon or has never really dove into it fully, I think this is a fantastic introduction to it. There's a lot of great ideas and discussion in regards to the reasons, and you do a lot of history and bring stories together. As I say, there are several stories that I was never aware of. I certainly wasn't aware of the prevalence of some of these stories in the Americas at all, which is really interesting. And I think it's a marvelous collection and something that we should cherish, that we have situations like this, Travis, where people are prepared to bring these things into the modern era. Because I think often my biggest regret in regards to the black dog is often it's consigned to the annals of history. And clearly, as your book says, without wanting to spoil any more of it, there are sightings all the way up to the modern day, all around the world. And it's a very interesting phenomena that really deserves a book of this magnitude. And I congratulate you on bringing it out for us.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I mean, it, like I said, it was a labor of love. I really enjoyed the entire process of putting the book together. And I hope, you know, I hope some folks will read the book and take an interest in this phenomena and dig into some of the resources that I provide at the end of the book. The phantom black dog, of course, is well known in folklore. You know, and a lot of the stuff that's been written about it was written in the 1930s and 1950s and refers back to witnesses in the 1800s. But people are still seeing this thing today.
Yes.
You only have to dig a little bit to find stories that are current, you know, that happened in the 90s, that happened in the 2000s. They're still being seen today. And that if your listeners don't hear anything else I say tonight, that's what I want them to hear, is this phenomena is still extant in the present day. People are still seeing phantom black dogs. And, you know, I in fact, you know, after my last interview, you know, with another podcast, I had someone contact me with a witness report. Now, I haven't gotten the report yet, but I mean, yeah, they had an experience and they wanted to share it. So they're still out there. That phenomena is still happening. So don't consign it to the realms of history. It's still something you can investigate if you want.
Yeah. I think often when an author releases a book of this nature, Travis, it's interesting that whenever someone kind of brings something out like this, all of a sudden people start to contact them and say, well, actually, this has happened to me. And then next thing you know, you've got a second volume on your hands. So before
I'm hoping. I'm working on another project right now, but I would certainly be, you know, I would certainly be willing to do a volume two that had, you know, like some of Linda Godfrey's work where people would contact me and you know, I was able to get their witness statements. So I'm certainly open to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a fantastic book, as I've said. Where can everybody get hold of a copy of it, Travis, and follow your work online and keep up to date with what you're up to?
Okay, so the book is currently available on Amazon. So I double checked, and it's definitely available at Amazon UK. It's available on Kindle as well. You know, if you have the Kindle Unlimited, you can actually get it for free. So that's an advantage. As far as social media, you can find me on Facebook, on Instagram, and on Twitter. And I believe you've got the links for that for the show notes.
Certainly have, and they'll be in there for anybody that wishes to follow you and track you down and keep an eye on your work. No problems.
Yes, those are pretty much the ways to get hold of me. I'm kind of a Twitter person, so you know, if you have a witness statement that you'd like to make, you can probably contact me by instant message there, and we can go from there. But those are the social media places where I can be gotten hold of.
Well, as we've said, I will put links to everything in the show notes towards the book and also your social media. And I just want to say thank you again for your time. It's wonderful to finally, after 140 odd episodes, to be able to talk about the black dog phenomenon. And I wish you the very best of luck with the book and your future projects. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much, Paul. I really appreciated your time and your effort in putting forth the podcast.